Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. Got a full cadre of characters, JB, Kirk, and Larry. How are you folks?
Just great.
Good.
Thanks.
Doing good?
Good. You know, the big item in the news here for the last 2 or 3 weeks has been transgender bathrooms. Larry, do you have a stand on
there's a big bathrooms? Issue. What did you just ask me? What?
You work in a school district, JB. You got an issue with transgender? You ever walked up to a bathroom and say, "I'm really confused"?
No, I pretty much know which one to go in.
You know what percentage?
What's wrong with you, JB?
You know what percentage of the U.S. population is transgender?
0.0001.
Yeah, it's actually 0.2%. They say,
if that.
That's
insane.
I can't even imagine that it's that. And you're going to let boys go into girls' restrooms and girls go into boys' restrooms because that's what they identify with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that could create a lot of problems for people pretending, couldn't it? Yeah.
Oh, it certainly could. Boy, talk about creating a mess where there didn't need to be a mess.
Craig, I'd said earlier, do you recall me talking about a general that had a big meeting, and this was one of the big to-do up on Capitol Hill, that the biggest problem they had to worry about, and this is with all these wars being fought all over the world, was transgendered people being treated appropriately in the military, and I was like, you have got to see, this is a full court press. They come out with what's his name, the triathlete guy.
What's his name?
Who's a girl now?
It was Bruce Jenner. Now Caitlin.
So first they come out with Caitlin, and then it's all okay. We all go, let's sing Kumbaya and hold hands.
Oh, wasn't ESPN made him their hero of the year or something?
Mm-hmm. Yes, as a matter of fact. It's a full court press. But go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt. It's just obvious.
It's a full court press against morality.
Yeah, sure.
That's all it is. It's just
common sense, even.
Right.
I mean,
when did the military treat anybody appropriately?
Never.
Well, you know what? The military goes out and kills people for a living. To treat guys that want to run around in dresses appropriately, what do you do? Molest them? I mean, I don't know what you do with them. What do you do with them? How do you treat them appropriately when you're in the shower room, as an example? I mean, I'd be going, get this damn guy out of here. Really.
It is astonishing. Yeah, speaking of astonishing, I was reading my daily dose of weird news. Johnny Depp, Johnny Depp's a weird dude. Johnny Depp, the guy that did Pirates of the Caribbean, and he's starring in Alice in Wonderland Through the Looking Glass. He was married to he's 52, he's married to a 30-year-old woman, an actress, Heard, I believe is her name, Amber Heard. They were married for a year. So she claims that he tossed a cell phone at her and that she got a boo-boo on her cheek because he tossed a cell phone at her. And what she is demanding in spousal support after
millions,
having,
I'm sure. Let me guess.
Spousal support, she wants $50,000 a month.
Oh, okay.
She's married to the dude for 12 months.
So this would be, it would be fair to say we're not likely to see Mrs. X Johnny Depp standing in any 2-day-old bread lines soon.
She's a professional actress, and yet she has the balls, talking about transgender, to request $50,000 a month from a guy that she was married to for a year.
This is just the, they call them Laodiosa there in the end, or Laodiosa.
Yeah, they
the
do.
People
yeah,
legislate. And Laodicea, excuse me. You're talking about sheer insanity at the end. I remember when I worked at Gallup, and Clinton was the president. I remember that the Congress legislated tornadoes out of existence. They actually went and did a vote on the Florida. This, no kidding, I know you guys think I'm crazy. I'm probably the only guy that's on. I was floored that day. I was floored. I said, who are these people? You know,
I remember reading about how South Carolina tried to legislate pi to change the, you know, pi, you know, the mathematical.
The mathematical pi?
They right. tried by law to change what pi was.
Oh, boy. How did that work?
So it couldn't be an irrational number anymore. They wanted it to be a rational number.
Yeah, they wanted it to be 3.1. That'd be it. Nope, that's it. That's all pi is now.
Yeah, somebody must have understood.
You don't understand how math works.
No, that's the end of it.
We're just
going to
be close.
That's the end of it. You know, speaking of hubris, which that's what we're really talking about here.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't read a lot of the witness writings. You know, and you know why? Because you know, we don't even know. And when I do
like Matt and Yah. There's a lot of good stuff in Matt and Yah, but Revelation, I think, is also pretty rich.
And that's fine, but we just, you know. But Matt and Yah 7:21-23, I had a question today, and I want to share this answer.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
The reason is because in the group, there's a lot of people that say, okay, now where do I go get all this? I sent that to you in an email, I believe. I don't know if you read it or not, but... you know, there is no one place to get the correct information, and the information has to be worked at. And so, do you recall you and Roy were talking about Proverbs 8?
Yeah.
I shared just one little email on one little verse,
right?
And what it really takes into doing it. So
right.
I've got a note on Matthew 21:23, which happens to be almost my favorite line in all of the witness writings, and because it really shows the hubris of the religious and how arrogant they truly are. I mean, they literally end up debating Yahweh as to whether he was with them or not. Like he didn't know. It is just outrageous.
Right. Yeah, get away from me. I don't know you. And they said, but, no.
We did all this stuff. But if you recall, what it says is not
that is pretty
anyone.
Hubris.
That's hubris.
No one. No one.
That's the definition of hubris. If you can sit and debate the creator of the dimension that you're in, as to whether he knew you or not, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But they are really that bad. I mean,
they claim that he is the decider as to who gets into heaven. That, you know, his death is the means to heaven. And the question in the statement he's saying is that no one calling me Lord, Lord is going to enter into heaven. And so,
Lord.
Of all people to argue with on that point, if you're a Christian,
come calling him Lord. Yeah, no, I mean, it's clearly he's talking to Christians. He describes them. You know, didn't we perform mighty miracles in your name? And, you know, we do buildings in your name?
Yeah,
we're very impressive guys. But anyway, when the word was pos, and you know, I never have a problem with somebody saying, how did something get translated pos, when it can say everyone. And I said, well, it could have said, pos, meaning not everyone, but it means not anyone. Well, how do you know that? And I say, well, you know, since the subject, and I just want people to hear this, you know, because there's a lot of people that want to go do translations. The subject is Yahweh, isn't it? I mean, he's the deciding factor here. And the problem with religious copy editors and scholars is that they really are lazy, for one thing.
Right.
I think for another thing, they have bosses they work for they have to make happy. And for another thing, I don't think any of them know Yahweh. So until somebody knows Yahweh's character, which is why I don't bother to read Jeff Benner's stuff, and a whole lot of other people's stuff, by the way, I really don't care what they have to say, because I could go figure it out myself better than they can. And here's what I said, okay? The problem with religious copy editors and scholars is that they rely on you not knowing Yahweh's character and nature. Okay? So let's see how Yahweh feels about being called Lord. And I lay down Yashia 56, where he says, basically, you know, part of being in the covenants, the love of my name.
Correct.
Now, you can't exactly love a name by replacing it with Baal's title and thus putting that nature of lording over somebody onto Yahweh, which is not what his name means at all. It means existence.
The third statement, the etched in stone, which is to negate or to belittle or to have my name be for naught, replacing Yahweh with Lord, is a direct violation of the third statement, Yahweh etched in stone, and he said it's unforgivable. And so if you want to take Yosha's statement and compare it to the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone, then no one is the only viable translation.
Not anyone
is the only translation that is consistent with the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone.
Well, then you've got another problem in Malachi. Remember, he said a son highly values and esteems and respects his father, and a servant his master. If I'm a father, where's my honor and and esteem? And if I'm a lord, where's my respect? Yeah. Oh, you clerics who despise my name. He's not saying he's their father or their lord. He's saying you despise my name. And then when we really get down to it over here in the Mashal 39, he delineates two different outcomes because it says, lest I become satisfied and I'm disowned, becoming insignificant, you know, that's pretty much becoming worthless, by saying, who is Yahweh? Unless I be disinherited, which is Yarish. And I'm caught in an act and arrested and incarcerated for, and that's Taphis, removing without permission and by stealth Yahweh's personal and proper name. So we got people that are dying because they followed the people who replaced his name with Lord. And now
Larry, just think about the context of Matanyahu 7. He's gone through this whole thing about trees. Says nothing good comes from a bad tree, nothing bad comes from a good tree, and he goes on to every permutation of that, which is there are no issues here which are gray. Everything here is black and white.
Yeah,
so it's all about it's all absolutely yes or absolutely no, totally true,
no middle ground,
totally false. No gray area. And you think that the next statement after he goes through this, no middle ground, it's only yes or no, black or
let
white,
me give you
good
some wiggle
or bad, right or wrong, and you think the next statement out of his mouth is an equivocal statement?
I want to give you wiggle room. That's what I said at the end. I said,
if you were the listener who had just heard, not every person who calls me Lord, Lord is going to enter the kingdom of heaven, wouldn't you, as your response, say, well, if it's not every, is it most? Is it, you know, just to make sure that we're in that big group that is most, you know, what is the criterion? But that's not what they say. What they try to say is, wait a minute, you've just excluded us, and that's not fair, so here we're going to give you our credentials. So the audience heard it as no one. Otherwise, they would not have had that response. And the conclusion to it, and that's the thing that Christians never do. They always want to take something out of context. The conclusion of it, get away from me, you who are Torahless.
Yeah, no, I said that. Yeah, that's just the jab at the end there. And wouldn't it be Torahless or against Yahweh's words to replace his name with Lord? I mean, I just went through four verses that said so.
Yeah, well, first statement, yes, and stone. You can't get any more.
I could have done that, too. I didn't, although I was aware of it. Although she's walking away from Christianity. She just wants, like I did when I started, wants to verify things.
Right.
And the only reason I bring this up is because
and
if
I don't
people
have a
want
to. I think that's a good thing. But
no, I don't either.
If you want to verify it, then the first thing you need to do is you need to be shaken up a bit. And to be shaken up a bit is, why did you take that out of context? Why didn't you consider what he said, which was totally black and white before it, and what he said And their response, which is they heard it, is black and white. You know, why aren't you evaluating this in context? Why don't you compare it to what Yahweh said? So rather than just focus on POTS, why don't you review it in the whole tapestry of what you know?
No, I agree with you. No, she thanked me at the end of it. That's not, and I have no issue with her at all for asking.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
I'm glad she did, because it clarifies when these translations are done, how painstakingly different and accurate they're going to be. It's not
right.
like picking up a strong and going, okay, well, this word means this.
Right.
Because, you know, they put everyone instead of anyone.
Of places,
because it can mean anyone. It can mean
right.
Cole. It can mean everyone.
Right.
You know, it can mean all that. But,
in
this case,
Roy and I shared, and I think Frank was also in on this, the three of us shared a question related to Bashal 8, Proverbs 8, which
right.
I have not translated. And I haven't translated
right.
it because there's aspects of it that I'm uncomfortable with. And, and I'm okay saying there's aspects of it I'm uncomfortable with for a number of reasons. One is it doesn't exist in the Dead Sea Scrolls, so all I've got is the Masoretic. So I'm okay
the
saying I'm uncomfortable
that's
with
a
them,
problem.
Right. Right. And number two, I use the rule that Yahweh provided. And I realized that there are things in the canon that is called the Bible that don't belong there. Like, for example, the Song of Solomon in Ecclesiastes doesn't belong there. And I'm not going to blindly just go along and say just because some cleric 3,000 years ago decided that it should be there, I'm not necessarily going along with it. As a matter of fact, if you even look at the rabbis have huge debates over Ecclesiastes' Song of Solomon. And most have made the same decision that I have, which is that it doesn't belong, it's not inspired. But Proverbs, there are Proverbs where they are prophetic. 6 and 7 is prophetic of Pauline Christianity. And it's very detailed. And so Yahweh has his signature all over it. You know, his signature.
Oh, yeah, it's stunning
accurate.
Prophecy, actually.
Right, accurate,
stunning yeah.
prophecy. When we get into 8, I didn't see any prophecy.
There isn't any. No, I know.
And
I
when
know.
We get into 8, the subject of 8 is wisdom.
Yep.
Wisdom is a two-edged sword. I mean, it is. Even the word for wisdom can mean shrewd and wily and crafty, in addition to executing a good judgment based upon information. It's very much like the tree of being able to discern between right and wrong, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know, it's not necessarily bad. It's not necessarily good. It depends on how you use it. And so when you deal with wisdom literature, that was the ground zero for Solomon. And Yahweh got along fine with Solomon. If Yahweh got along fine with Solomon, I don't have an issue with Solomon. But there is no indication in anything that Solomon wrote that Yahweh inspired him to write those things. So I see Proverbs 8 as potentially being either from Solomon or partly written by Solomon or augmented by Solomon. And there's a section in it that, I'm just not comfortable with. And so I just choose not to to translate. Now, if it was in the Torah and I was uncomfortable with it, I continue to work at it until I understood it. But in a proverb, unless it's from Dode, I'm just not going to invest the time. And so, but by sharing our discussion on Proverbs 8, I think what it does is those who read our discussion, they're going to come away with the perception that we're not dogmatic.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the whole point. I mean, you can't be. I mean, otherwise. I've said this, and this is profound. What's happening here is very, very profound. You're talking about doing something that hasn't been done in thousands of years. I mean, go look at other translations.
Right.
Go see. Go see if they're accurate.
You're
going to find out they're not.
When 90% of what you're learning is unpopular, it's uncommon, it hasn't been said or thought about in thousands of years,
That's right.
You're in a position where you have this mix of humility that comes from, I don't want to be dogmatic here, because, you know, what we're saying is so far away from the common perception that the last thing I want to do is say, you know, I'm inerrant, because I'm not. And so I won't go there. But then the other side is, since everything fits together so beautifully and is so profound, you know, those wonderful prophecies, wonderful historical insights, a beautiful tapestry that has been woven with a marvelous intent, plan, and character. You know, and on that side, you're just extraordinarily confident. So, you know, it is this mix. You know, I was thinking...
Well, in this case with Matnya, obviously Paz is not anyone. I mean, he tells, you know, it doesn't serve his nature. It not only is it Baal's title, okay, but it is in complete opposition to Yahweh's nature. It's like a double whammy right there.
Right, but
you know,
I have to. I want to caution you on one thing.
Yeah.
Is that while I agree that Paz has to be in that context, not anyone
in that context. That's
in
what
that
I'm
context.
Saying.
However. Yeah. Yosha did not say Paz.
No, he didn't. He wasn't speaking Greek. That's just
that
as close as they could come, just like he wasn't speaking English.
And we don't have
English.
A Hebrew
And you could take it anyone or everyone.
I would be willing to be... I mean, I am dogmatic based on the context of what was being discussed that it's not anyone. I mean, I'll just say, you know, I bet my soul on it that it's not anyone
based upon
what with the passages you cited and I cited. It's clearly not anyone calling... Yosha, Lord, is going to enter the kingdom of heaven. You know,
well, they don't even know
him. Yeah, you're making two mistakes. One is...
Yeah, you just broke in Torah twice.
You ought not be calling out to the diminished manifestation. The diminished manifestation didn't say, you know, call out to me. No, he tried to...
No, he pointed at the Father for one thing.
So first of all, your focus is wrong. But second of all... You picked the absolute
wrong
name. You could name and title, and Baal is both a name and a title. You picked the absolute worst one you could possibly pick. If you're that stupid that you call him by the adversary's name and title, then you clearly don't know him.
You've just said I'm a religious initiate, and Yahweh is not a religious deity, so this is a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
and then the justification was religion. Yeah. But the whole thing was the context, of course, of the sermon, or the instruction on the Mount, and the instruction on the Mount was primarily, the primary purpose of the instruction on the Mount was to, and it's the first public address Yosha made, and its overriding purpose is to say, do not think I came to create the religion of Christianity. I am wholly opposed to the religion of Christianity. I did not and will not inspire Paul, and I am not annulling or replacing the Torah. Do not think for a second that the religion of Christianity is coming from me. That's what the instruction on the Mount says.
Yeah, essentially, that's what it says.
Completely ignore that one.
Yeah, the wolf in sheep's clothing. Except I've been called the wolf in sheep's clothing. Me, who is opposed to Mr. Paulos from the tribe of Benjamin that Yahweh called the wolf. I mean, come on, stupid.
I don't think anyone can accuse you of wearing sheep's clothing there, Larry. You're usually
the last guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things, by the way, I think that's common among everybody in the covenant. There's nobody in the covenant that's a chameleon. One of the things that we will not do is pretend unity with a group to somehow gain an advantage. You know, most everybody tries to, every politician, you know, if they're in New Hampshire, they're a New Hampshireite. You know, if they're in Wisconsin, they're a Wisconite. I mean, they pretend to be whatever their audience wants them to be. And that's one thing about the covenant. We don't make no pretense.
Well, Hillary even does it with her voice and with her accents as well.
Oh, yeah, she talks Southern when she's
really
out.
Really sick. Woman sick.
I got a real simple saying I tell people that get upset at me, and that's I don't care who I offend with the truth.
That's right.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the big transition for me, JB, is that when I was being publicly humiliated for things I did not do in business, it really stung. But I don't care if I'm publicly crucified or humiliated for telling people the truth. You know, if you're going to be attacked, it's good to be attacked for telling people the truth. And it's and particularly when we're telling people the truth, and that is not self-serving. I mean, what we share is not self-serving. It's the truth. We enjoy it, but there is absolutely no benefit to us of somebody accepting it, and no cost to us of somebody rejecting it.
Can I mention a couple of things?
Sure.
Two real quick things. If in regards to lexicons and things, all these different ones, which I kind of right now I'm dealing with about 25 different things. I don't think anybody that wrote any of this stuff knows y'all.
No, I would agree.
But that doesn't mean that the research as far as what they're... I use the lexicons, like dictionaries. I mean, I don't care who Webster is. I don't want people out there to throw all their lexicons away, because how the heck are you going to find this if you speak English? You better learn that. And you saw it in Hebrew, you can't throw all this stuff away. I don't read the commentary like Larry. I don't read the commentary either. I don't care what a Brenner says or a Strong says. And even when I go...
And Kirk, just... I mean, you're more of a bookish guy than I'll ever be, okay?
And so
I'm not attacking you either, okay?
I'm not taking offense to it, but I don't want somebody out there to say, well, you know, what can you do? I mean, I don't know where else I was...
I use interlinears and I use lexicons.
I bring it up for a purpose, and the purpose that I bring it up for is that you can't... I probably shouldn't have put an apostrophe there. You can't listen to what they say when they do a commentary.
No, and I agree.
Because it's trash.
Even with the lexicons and dictionaries, you cannot use them as a de facto inerrant tool. You have to filter out their bias.
But once you know about 20 or 30 things, you can go, well, that ain't right. Like Larry was talking a minute ago. I know that's not his character, therefore, you can't turn it into his character.
Do you want to hear a good one? Do you want to hear a good one here? You know in Malachi where Yahweh talks about my upright one is despised fruit. You know, he's been pierced. Mm-hmm. Something another ministry went by on my page today. I was looking at it, and they had Yahweh writing, my master, Yahshua. My master, Yahshua.
Oh, my goodness.
Yahweh. This was, they were quoting Malachi. I said, I jumped on it. I said, you people are so full of shit. I said, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? You know, I mean.
It's one thing for Yahweh to refer to Yahshua as my upright one, because he's the one that stood up for us.
Can you imagine him calling him his Lord, his master?
No. And also,
part of me is my master.
Because my upright one is really not a great translation of Edonai. With the Y at the end just makes it my. But Edon, while you can translate Edon as upright pillar or upright one, when Edon is used in the Torah, and every time that it's used in the Torah, Edon is not the proper vocalization of the word. It's Edon. Edon is used, 30, 40 times in the Torah. Every time that it is used in the Torah, it is always used to convey the same thing. And it's the upright pillar that sits into the foundation
of the tabernacle of
the witness. And it's designed to not only hold up the roof of the tabernacle, but to make it secure against the elements. And the larger and the stronger that upright pillar, the larger and the stronger, the safer is the tent as protection from the elements. And so the Edon is always the upright pillar of the tabernacle. That's the complete concept of what it conveys. And Yosha is the the metaphor of the upright pillar of that tabernacle, mm-hmm. of the tabernacle of the witness, it's a beautiful metaphor for Yosha. So I can see, yeah, I was saying it all day long.
Yeah, you're talking about upright ones. Sure, an upright pillar of
right,
tabernacle.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
And that's being more than just upright one. That's true. That it's more in depth than that. But it's certainly not my master or my Lord. Can you imagine the stupidity of a diminished manifestation of yourself and you're calling him my Lord or my master? How would this be? I mean, how dumb do we have to get? You know,
folks don't think.
We have to get pretty dumb. You know.
Yeah, like the statement I'm going to read right now on from Chabaouk. And we're going to start in Chabaouk 2:5. And almost every English translation has this as Sheol is the plague of death. But the sentence itself includes soul, nefesh. And, you know, only animals have souls. Sheol is not an animal.
Well, not only that, but in context, let's go back to context here. We're talking about a single male individual E that misleads most Gentiles all over the world with a religion. That can't
be Sheol. Yeah, there's a number of Hebrew words for man. The two most common are Ish, which is individual, male individual. Isha would be female individual. So Ish is very common. Adam is very
right.
common. You know, Adam is not only the name,
mankind,
but also it's a Hebrew word for, and it's always Ha Adam in the Bereshit account. It means the man. So Enosh means a mortal man, for example. But in the sentence we're going to read from 2:5, it names Shaul. It says that this man, or of the man, and it's Geber. Geber is an individual human being. A Geber is a human. A Geber is not a place. A Geber is not a thing. You know, it's not a toaster oven. It's not a microwave. It's not a blender. A Geber is a man. And so this says, moreover. Go ahead.
Well, it comes from Geber, and that's the one who conducts himself arrogantly, magnifies himself strongly. A warrior like a lord.
Yeah, so it's not just
it's not a man.
It's an arrogant man.
Yeah, we're starting. Yeah, it's not even just
arrogant, prideful.
Yeah, one who magnifies himself. Yeah.
Did you think a guy that said Satan helped him get the words out? That might be a little arrogant, maybe.
Just a man.
Yeah, so, and by the way, that's the kind of research that is helpful. You know, when you look at the words, because in my translations, I just wrote down individual human being. I've translated Geber enough times that I know that what you're saying is also true. But, you know, probably the reason I didn't put it there in my translation, even in the parenthetical, is because two statements earlier, he's saying he's got an enormous ego.
Yahweh
has had a lot of terms he could have chosen for man. He didn't choose Ish, which is an individual, neither good nor bad. Adam's is a special term because Adam indicates that you are an individual with a nesama, if he's using the term Adam. And if he's using Ish, you know, Ish could mean is a much broader, less specific term, but he chose Geber for a reason, and it's because of that it conveys arrogance, right?
Appropriate.
Right, right. So, moreover, because of the intoxicating wine and the inebriating spirit, Yahweh uses the term inebriating throughout the prophets, and it is really common. It's you know, one of his most common metaphors, and he uses metaphors just like in the witness writings. You see, read all the parables. The metaphors are word pictures, and they're designed so that somebody who is maybe not as thoughtful, as considerate, as literate, as rational, can still understand. God wants to be able to communicate with everybody, and a metaphor helps do that. Now, you know, one of the advantages too of a metaphor is that if you are thoughtful, you can take it further. For example, if you, why is it that it's a crime to drive a car drunk? Why?
Because your judgment is impaired.
There you go. Right.
Yeah.
You're going to make bad decisions, and you're going to make those decisions more slowly. And so your judgment is impaired. And so inebriation impairs one's judgment. The whole idea of religion is to fool unthinking people. I mean, religion is so obviously false. It fools unthinking people. So God uses a term in inebriation to demonstrate that that this is somebody who is offering something that impairs people's judgment. And that's what religion does. Religious people are incapable of executing good judgment. There's another aspect of inebriation and of being drunk of alcohol. And that is that if you're around alcohol, it actually, the alcohol has a, it's a gas in at room temperature. It can be a gas or a liquid, but it doesn't take much for you actually to feel it in your eyes, to smell it in your nose, you know. We call it a spirit. Mm-hmm. It's even called, alcohol is even called spirit today.
Spirit, yeah.
And so it's a, it is the intoxicating spirit. The intoxicating spirit would be safe.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why it's intoxicating, inebriating spirit of man. So moreover, because the intoxicating wine and inebriating spirit of the man, singular, human being, of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal, this is Bagad. You know, Bagad is somebody who is in a position to know better. This answers the question, did Paul believe that it was really Yosha on the road to Damascus? Did he really think it was God that was inspiring him? Was he just misled? Or did he deliberately perpetrate a fraud?
Well, it says we know the answer down the road. It was deliberate. Deliberate.
Well, this word,
deliberate.
This word, Bagad, says deliberate. Betrayal means that you have deliberately turned against someone for bogus reasons to betray them.
Well, it's adulterous. It's offensive behavior, right?
Right. Right.
Sure.
So this is a man of deceptive infidelity. So he is being dishonest for the express purpose of betraying someone. Is a high-minded moral failure. High-minded, all that means is this person thinks a lot of themselves. They think they're a stunning orator, a stunning writer, a stunning speaker. That's just Paul. Paul just thought he was the best. He went into Ephesus and said, you know, that when Yahu Khanan baptized you, that was worthless. And what he said to you was worthless, so I'm going to go in and redo it because what I do counts. What he does, no. And then he talked about the disciples as being supposed it and people assumed that they had merit, but their merit means nothing to me. I mean, that's a high-minded failure right there.
And it's also interesting, and you can point this out, that it was Yahu Khanan that ended up writing the seven letters to the Ecclesia, you know?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Especially when Paulos said he was the apostle to the Gentiles, and all those Gentiles got letters from Yahu Khanan.
Those seven letters. Would you tell me, please, Larry, which of those seven cities were in Israel?
None of them. Not a one.
So every one of them was a Gentile city.
That's right.
So how would it be possible for Yahu Khanan to be limited to Jews, as Paul claims, and Paul have exclusive right to Gentiles, if all seven letters were to Gentiles?
Simple. God's a liar.
Okay, well, that answers that question. All right, so it says, he will not find rest, peace, or live. He will not live. Whoever is open to the broad path associated with Shaul. Does the broad path ring any bells with you guys?
Yeah, that would be, there's a religion with like 2 billion idiots involved in it.
Yeah. Right now. Yeah. Is there any broader path than Christianity?
Nope.
Most popular
in the world
religion
today.
History of the most popular religion in the history of the world. And didn't Yosha speak of a broad path in his on his instructional mount?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you mean the same one where he said, "You Torahless people, you people that oppose the Torah, and call me Lord, and do great things in my name."
Didn't he say that
one?
The broad path, the most popular path, leads to death and destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that the narrow path that very few find that leads to life.
That should still resonate. You resonate with me as a Christian. I mean, well, I don't get that. It must be only a small group of us are going to make it. That's the way I used to think.
Yeah, that's
Kirk, that's what I used to say. I sit there and I say, well, what do you have more faith than the next guy?
Yeah,
I mean, it's all done on faith, isn't it? I mean, really, ultimate
our
end?
Our friend Don, right in his wheelhouse. He always used to say, you really don't have to go any further with a Christian than that statement from Yosha on the Instruction on the Mount. When he said that, you know, broad is the way that leads to death and destruction, and many there are that find it, and narrow is the way, and few there are that find it, that leads to life, then absolutely, unequivocally, the most popular religion in the world cannot be the way to life. It is, by Yosha's own explanation, it's the way to death.
Now, by the way, that would destroy all religions right there. I mean, it just would.
Any religion that was the least bit popular, but I'm not aware of really any religion in the world that would have less than, you know, a million adherents, and a million adherents would make you, would disqualify you. So you're right. Every known religion would be disqualified.
Right.
Well, the answer that we get from a preacher regarding this matter, they'd say something like, "Well, your trouble is, don't question it, and have faith," which is what Paul always does. The trouble is, Yahweh says Shemar Torah, which means to carefully consider and closely examine, as we always like to say. And we're turning over words left, right, and center from every source we can find, and we're also looking at the letters and on and on and on and on. That would be contrary to what he says, but that would be absolutely. Yah's not afraid of you to examine it and find out what he says.
Yeah, you know.
You mean sort of like the way he's not commanding anything because
So if Yosha said that the broad path leads to death and destruction, and it's only the narrow path that few find that leads to life, and we find right here that that he will not live whomever is open to the broad path. Do we find absolute harmony in their statements?
Absolutely. 100%.
Total harmony. And remember I said, and I would dare anyone to refute this, that the Instruction on the Mount was delivered to completely negate anybody misconstruing the idea that Yosha came to establish the religion of Christianity. It is, the Instruction on the Mount was written, was delivered to disown, to distance Yosha from anything associated with Pauline Christianity. It is an argument against Christianity. And right here, the religion that Shaul created, Christianity, he's calling the broad path, and he says no one will live that accepts it. Now, that's prophetic in the sense that he's saying that a fellow named Gerber, named Shaul, is going to create a broad path that leads to death. And
that's what he just said.
Do you know, with that name, created a religion?
None. I know of one. And you could have went out and created a religion, I guess, if your parents were stupid enough to name you after the king.
You've got a Confucius that created a religion. You've got a Buddha that created a religion. You've got a Muhammad that created a religion. You've got a Zoroastrian that created a religion.
Zoroaster was his name. I read all about him, but no.
Right.
And
you've got
then
a Paul,
the
Christian was exactly. Created a religion. Right.
Yeah.
You don't,
then the Christian apologist comes to you and says,
only one religion created by a fellow named Shaul.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. There's only one. Especially one that that most of the Gentiles gather unto him from different races and nations all over the place. There's only one. Only one.
So this thing is just killing. So it says, moreover, because of the intoxicating spirit of the man of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal, because he's a high-minded moral failure, he will not find rest. He will not find peace. He will not live. Whoever is open to the broad path associated with Shaul. He and his soul are like the plague of death. Now, we have found that Yahweh must repeat this association between Shaul and the plague of death 30 times? 40 times? It's all over the place. I mean, it's
enough to make it where you can't deny it.
Yeah, I would speculate that it's the single most common prophetic statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and these are astounding, though. These are astounding prophecies. I feel, you know, and especially when, you know, he goes into the end of, you know, I don't mean to give it away, but at the end of Chapter book, where he's talking about standing in front of a piece of wood at the end and claiming that gives you life.
Come on.
Picture this. There's a sign that's just been painted for you, dummy. It's called Dummies Look. You know,
dummies, look at them. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's astounding. He and his soul are the plague of death, and Yahweh goes over it and over it and over it again. In fact, the two Proverbs that we've done, Proverbs 6 and 7, Mashal 6 and 7, they are specifically, and they by name, dealing with
Paul.
Every aspect of them is condemning of
it's astounding. Hey, you know, I was asking your friend Dode, the Kiwi, down there in Kiwi Land.
I will claim him as my friend. I like him.
You are. He's my buddy, too. But here's the thing about it. I asked him, how could anybody name their kid after Sheol, king? I mean, think about just the stupidity of that. I mean, I just don't get it. Do you get it?
Right.
Can you guys explain how an idiot could do that?
When the Hebrew name for the place of abandonment, the place of for separated souls, is Sheol.
Is Sheol.
And it's written the same way as Shaul.
I know.
Why would you do that?
No, and then you got the king. The example of the king who wanted Dode dead, the most loved.
Right.
And Yahweh said, you guys are jerks to choose him. Remember that? And so, that's the name of my kid. That's my namesake. And God is with
namesake.
Me.
Stupid. Paul,
I think someone just goes to show.
For their child.
Well, you know what, though, JB? It just goes to show people have been basically retarded forever.
Nothing new about it.
We have been. Oh, we've been retarded for a long time. There's no question about it. And so, those who are brought together by him, accepting him, will never be satisfied. Almost every Gentile will gather together unto him, all the people from different races and nations. You know, goyim, goyim here. I mean, it was goy, goyim at the end here. You know, there's only one guy that based his entire claim on goyim. You know, you don't hear Buddha saying, you know, I'm just talking to you, goyim. You don't hear Confucius say, you know, it's just these goyim that I'm interested in. You don't even hear Muhammad say goyim. I don't even think Muhammad knew what the term goy was.
No.
Or that he was one.
Yeah.
Or that he was one. But it's clueless. There isn't anybody. You know, Hadrian's a bad dude. Did he ever say, you know, my mission in life is to hoodwink the goyim?
The goyim?
Nope.
There's only one guy that said all the Gentiles are mine. God gave me exclusivity over the Gentiles.
Yeah, that was Sheol.
Right. And the most popular Gentile religion in human history, Christianity.
Christianity. Yep, bar none.
So God is not just calling him out by name and calling him the plague of death. He's not just saying that he's intoxicating and that he's egotistical. He's saying that he's going to create a broad path, which means a very popular religion, and that religion is going to be extraordinarily popular with Gentiles. It's going to be worldwide. Wow.
Especially one that ends up there at the foot of a piece of wood, claiming that gives you life. I mean,
Larry, what does Shaul mean?
It means question him, which is very funny because I know that's
what
coming up on.
The next statement says, they do not ask questions, any of them, about him.
Talk about in your face. I mean, that's just a barb.
Yeah, that is God saying, okay, in your face. His name means question him, and they don't question him.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, he's stupid. That's like the sign at the end of this thing, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm just blown away that people can't get this.
I'm stupid. Terse references to the word they lift up as taunts to ridicule. Well, I mean, that's how Paul wrote his letters. He took terse, which means that he takes a snippet from what Yahweh said.
Truncated.
Truncate that snippet, twist it, and then uses it to say that it's a claim that it's saying exactly the opposite of what Yahweh said.
Yeah, he even took a piece here out of Chabbalook and did it.
He was a psychopath. He did it. He took a piece right out of Chabbalook, which said exactly the opposite, and he took a portion of a sentence and misstated it to infer the opposite of what God had said. And that, is that not what the Christians do, though, when you, like, for example, when our friend Jerry McLaughlin was... trying to help a fellow that he had known, and he said, Paul is a false prophet. This guy said, but what about, Peter's letter? And he quotes the one line from Peter that my beloved Paul Paul's writings are considered scripture. Well, first of all, he only said that Paul's writings are grapha, which means they're letters. That's all he said.
Well, he also said he practiced sophia, sophist is a bad thing.
But take out of context this the statement, and that's what they do. They just pull out a statement to ridicule. And they, the bottom line is beyond the fact that that it doesn't say that his letters are scripture. All it says is grapho. Grapho in Greek means to write. That his letters were written is all he said.
Right, and with human understanding. Actually, it's worse than human understanding.
And then he goes in context and he says that they are use circular reasoning and they lead people to their damnation.
Yeah, that's an endorsement.
Right, sure. and somebody will take that out of context, mistranslate it to ridicule the entire book of Chabbalook, to dismiss it, the entire instruction on the mount, and they'll ridicule it with that one statement pulled out of context.
Well, first, it's not just pulled out of context; it's rewritten. They don't say he's a sophist. A sophist is generally a con man. He's using man's philosophy in order to gain, isn't that what Paul said? He said when he stood in front of the people of the Torah, he said, "I represent the Torah, so I might gain from
it."
He
was a Gnostic.
When I stand in front of people that are lame and poor, I act lame and poor. And when I stand, I'm just a big chameleon.
You're correct. The reason that you use sophist is because Pauline doctrine is based in its entirety on Gnosticism.
It's sophistry. Yeah, I know that.
Not Gnosticism is the philosophy of Aristotle and Socrates and Plato. They were Gnostics, and their whole concept as a Gnostic was that the physical world that we're seeing, the of the flesh, if you will, the physical world, was a less than ideal, corrupted variation of a spiritual variation of these things that was pure. And so
Sophia was also a goddess. She was a goddess, by the way.
True. But Gnosticism, the idea of Gnosticism, it was both a religious and philosophical idea that was extraordinarily popular throughout Greece. And Pauline doctrine of his whole thing of the Torah is of the flesh, circumcision is of the flesh is bad, and of the spirit is good. But the problem, of course, that you run into with Gnostics is Gnosticism is that sensiosha is a diminished physical manifestation of Yahweh, of the flesh would make him bad. So It's beyond the fact that it's Greek philosophy. The sophist, if you will, it's inconsistent with what Yahweh says. God doesn't ever say there's something wrong with the flesh, but that's the whole, you know, the fornication things that deal with Christians. They're always worried about of the flesh, but God's got no issue with the flesh. Created the flesh, he thought it was good. Created Adam in the flesh, thought it was good. So anyway, they said, they do not ask questions of him. Terse references to the word, they lift up his taunts to ridicule, along with elusive sayings and mocking interpretations. And that's the whole thing. This, in fact, this last word, malitza, is derisive words wrapped in enigmas, arrogantly spoken. And once you understand that is Paul's strategy, is to take a snippet that God said out of context and then use it to twist what God said to create the impression that is the opposite of what he said.
Well, and that's exactly what he did. I mean, you can there's in questioning Paul, you have piece after piece after piece where he does exactly that. I mean, exactly
over and over
that.
Again. Right.
Yes.
There are hard and perplexing questions that need to be asked of him, and they are hard and perplexing questions. You know, for us mere mortals, this is, you know, looking at it from this perspective, I can just laugh at it. I mean, it's so stupid that that any of us believe that Paul actually spoke for God. It's just absolutely preposterous. But, you know, initially, it's a hard and perplexing question that needs to be asked. So they should say, whoa, to the one who claims to be great, so as to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi, neither of which apply to him. For how
which,
long?
That tells us right there that he was a liar. That he never even made it through rabbi school. He lied about that.
Of course.
Well, even if you took rabbi as the term, exalted one, he's not exalted. Even if you took it out of the context of a religious leader,
right.
I mean, he just used it as exalted. He had
but Paul called himself great. He demeaned everybody else. Everybody else was less valuable than him, less important to him, and their message was not viable. Only his was viable. From you know what he says, he was the one that took all the beatings and made all the speeches and wrote all the letters and had God's lone endorsement. So, perplexing questions that should be asked of him. And of this one who claims to be acting like a rabbi, which he did. I mean, he claimed to be the best of the rabbis. Increasing
well, he said he was a Pharisee's Pharisee. He trained at the feet of Gamaliel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, neither Gamaliel. Neither which apply to him. And Christianity, like all religion, you make a pledge. You know, the sinner's prayer or the four basic laws or the... You know, the Billy Graham, just the whole thing. It's all a pledge.
Or you go up and get baptized into the church, like in the Church of Christ. That's what I did.
That was a dumb answer. When I was an elder in the Presbyterian Church, we were always soliciting pledges. We wanted pledges. And what a pledge was? That was how
money.
Much you pledged to give over the year.
Yeah, That's money, literally. I know.
Yeah, and he loads himself down with thick, dark, and wicked mud, dirt. So why not?
That's religion.
For a short time.
That's religion.
Yeah, rise up and stand up. You know, we're all wallowing in the mud. It's a pigsty. Religion is a pigsty. We're all, everybody that's religious is wallowing in the mud. God says, get up. I mean, I don't care how much time you have. Get out of the pigsty. Stop rolling in the mud with these guys. And those of you who are bitten and are making payments to them, again, these pledges, wake up from your stupor, moving away in abhorrence of him, because you will be considered plunder by him. You know, just look at the money that is donated to the Roman Catholic Church or to these mega churches and how these televangelists bring in all of this money. You know, and God is saying, wake up from your stupor.
It's like a snake
that has bitten you. Stop making payments to him.
Yeah, you know, and I just want to say this. You know, any somewhat
reasonable person has to realize two things. The Catholic Church is straight up evil. And two, yes, these mega churches, like the one that's now got Chris Lymer, example, or this guy Joel Osteen, that thinks the point of Noah's Ark was we should all own a yacht. Yeah, whatever. Anybody who buys into these clowns, honestly, they should be summarily shot.
Yeah, I think it was Kirker Scott said today that the Huffington Post, which, you know, the woman that she is a real nutcase. Yeah, she is really a scumbag. But the woman that runs the Huffington Post, she said that every Christian pastor should acknowledge that Muhammad was a prophet.
I know, I read that. I was kind of stunned at even that. I thought, well, okay, so what I see going on here, because the Pope's saying it too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, right. One world
government. This is the other full court press. There's two full court press. One's on transgender, and the other's the marrying of the two religions. But, you know, my good friend Lisa had pointed out to me, so is in the beginning, it shall be in the end. And, of course, the national sun deity was Baal, and the national lunar deity was Sin, represented in a crescent moon. So, yeah, they're going to marry the two together. They're going to marry them together.
Yeah.
They're doing it now.
And, you know, you just think about how naive you have to be to say that, because Quran says, hey, you know, Muslims, do not take Christians as your friends. Don't associate with them. If you associate with them, then you become like them, and the good Muslim jihadists are going to kill you.
That's right.
You know,
what is that?
And the Quran itself says that Muhammad wasn't a prophet. So what in the world are you thinking to make that kind of a statement? We're just going to be politically correct.
Well, you're doing,
you're wholly incorrect.
It's beyond that. I think it's beyond that. I think it's the same exact reason. You know, the German, what's her name?
Merkel.
President,
Merkel.
I guess. Whatever she is called over there for her. She said basically the same thing. And it's funny, they all come out at the same time with these stories, whether it's gun control or whether it's transgenderism or whether it's...
I think they all get the memo.
Well, you know, they have an agenda. I mean, they have an agenda. I mean, that's it. I mean, you don't accidentally come up with this ignorant stuff.
No.
I mean, come on.
No, Angela Merkel is not a Muslim. So for her to say we should all accept Muhammad as a prophet and acknowledge Muhammad as a prophet, all she's trying to do is position herself as the Messiah of the world. And that's what she wants to be considered, you know, as somebody that's enlightened and a unifier. Obama makes the same kind of statements.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's a full court press going on.
Yeah,
no
they don't have much time, and they're moving quickly towards unification. Because you have plundered, stealing the possessions of an enormous number of goyim, they shall loot and victimize all of the remaining goyim by means of the blood, that's the lifeblood of humankind, and also through the violent and cruel destruction of forces terrorizing the land and Yah's city, even those living in her. All right, let's think this through. Is there any institution in human history that has plundered more people than the Roman Catholic Church?
No.
What not percentage of the church is Gentiles, composed of Gentiles?
Mm-hmm.
All of it?
99.99999.
But this is Gentiles. They're going to loot and victimize the remaining Gentile nations. And now the lifeblood of humankind is the plague of death.
Right.
Also through violent and cruel destructive forces terrorizing the land. Now the first to, in the name of Christianity, to terrorize the land, of course, was Rome. When, you know, Paul endorsed the government of Rome. And you know, in 70, the Romans violently destroyed, and from God's point of view, Imperial Rome and the Roman Catholic Church are the same beast.
Yeah, they are.
You know, if you want to say, hey, the Roman Catholic Church wasn't as vicious, it was only not as vicious initially because the Roman legions had run out of steam. I mean, they had abused so many people that they couldn't recruit more people into forced servitude, and they were just getting bludgeoned around the world by the time 400 CE, and so the Roman Catholic Church, the transition from Imperial Rome to Roman Catholicism was more peaceful, but not from Yah's point of view. From Yah's point of view, Imperial Rome and the Roman Catholic Church are the same beast.
And still killing souls.
Right, and they're both killing souls.
Boy, he also said it was going to be the hardest to get rid of. You know,
but this is terrorizing the land, the institution, the government that's terrorized the land worse than anyone in history, and that includes Muslims, is Imperial Rome. And
no question about it.
You know, it's
even Muslims got together with Jews to fight Rome at one time. It got so bad on both of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad the Romans are. I mean, honestly.
Well, if you're looking at the Imperial Rome, you have them killing the Passover lamb. They're the ones that tortured and killed the body of Yosha. Now, I would consider that violence against Yisrael when you kill the diminished manifestation of God, the body of the manifestation of God. So that's one. Number two is when they destroyed the temple and used the loot and the slaves to build the Colosseum. That's about as bad as it gets, and then Hadrian was as bad as it gets. I mean, there was no time was the land ever terrorized as badly as the Romans did. And they, you know, there's some competition.
How many people did he crucify? Was it like 400,000 or something? I mean, it was a lot.
The reason we really don't know is because the Roman historians, starting with the Caesars, right around the time of Augustus, and actually at the time of Julius. Julius was his own historian. But all the way through about the end of the 4th century, just as you can't trust the witness writings because of the fact that those scribes that were memorializing what was said had a free hand, they would say whatever was beneficial to them, the Roman historians are just absolutely, totally, completely untrustworthy. I mean, you read what they wrote, and it's just laughable. So when you ask how many were killed, the only history is provided by the Romans.
And
they just weren't credible. So the estimates are in the range of 500,000 or 600,000 that were crucified. But no one really knows.
That's getting to the land pretty bad. Tearing down the temple and enslaving all those within the land and forcing them to build the Colosseum with the materials from the temple, that's an affront.
And it says in Yah's city. So that would be the ones that have terrorized Yah's city, that's the Romans.
And
it's Rome that Paul wrote on behalf of in the book of Romans and the Roman government. Paul was himself a Roman. And so he's speaking of still Pauline Christianity and Roman Catholicism here, and those and even today they will call Jews Christ killers. You kill
Jews.
Yes,
they will. Yes, they will. It's astonishing.
Woe to the one who is cut off, coveting, while wickedly soliciting ill-gotten gain. In relation to him setting his home and temple in association with the heights of heaven, so as to spare the acquired property and possessions from the hands of his countrymen. Paul was the only one that asked for money. Yosha's prophets don't ask for money. God doesn't ask for money.
No.
Paul sure as hell does. The Christian church became spectacular at soliciting money and making people feel really guilty they didn't dig deep.
Well, you know, right there, you know, I just want to digress here a little bit. You know, in the Mishal we've been going over, he talks about the stupidity of people thinking that something is free can be bought with money.
Right.
Or maybe it was in Shamuel. Maybe it was in Shamuel.
God says, you know, I can't be bought. You know, there is no amount of money that's going to change my view of you. I don't have any interest in money. There's no amount of sacrifices, no amount of money, no amount of good deeds. There's nothing you're going to do that's going to impress me. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's straight up. I mean, he says so. He says you're coming to me, you know, with all this junk in your hands, basically.
Yeah.
It ain't going to work.
Who in the world told you that I wanted this stuff? Why is it that you think that this stuff that you're bringing is somehow going to cause me to accept you? Not going to happen. Then he says here, you have deliberately decided upon and conspired at the advice of another to promote a lowly and shameful plot to confuse.
Lowly.
Now, there you go.
Lowly little.
Yeah.
There you go.
Who did he deliberately conspire to promote this lowly and shameful plot?
With Ha Satan, period.
Yeah,
that's
right,
the
adversary. Yeah,
at first I thought that meant Marcion. You know, I thought, well, maybe it's just not quite right it was Marcion. Because he put his little words in a book. And I want to also point out, this is one of this, for people that don't know, the way this New Testament came about was not just Paul's concepts, but it was Marcion putting Paul's letters in a book, and he claimed that the old nasty Jewish God was dead. Dead. He said it.
He did. In Romans, he says that the God of the Torah is dead. Now, this is interesting because the verb here, boshet, is from Bashan. And you know what Bashan means? It's telling us who was supplying the advice. It says, you know, you have deliberately decided and conspired on the advice of another. Well, the advice of another here, after consultation, it's the word is based upon Bashan.
Serpent.
Which is not just shameful and lowly and confusing, it's the serpent.
Yeah.
It means serpent. It's the Hebrew word for serpent.
It straight up means Ha-Satan, right there.
That's it. Now, I only know two guys that started a popular, broad-based religion that admitted to being demon-possessed, Muhammad and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Those are it. And so this says that the advice will come from the serpent. Those who approach your house ruining and reducing by cutting off many people from different races and places and in the process losing your soul. And so Paul conspired with the advice of the serpent, Satan, and he cut people off from the covenant, from Yahweh. And it's Goyim that he's cutting off, because it's Goyim here. And in the process, he lost his soul. Now, what follows is amazing. He says, indeed, the rock, as part of the structure of a home, will issue a proclamation, and that which connects with the timber, he will answer and respond. Now, you know, remember when Yosha said, upon this rock I will build my mikre, my invitations to be called out.
You know, established.
And then he started calling Shimon Kefesh the rock. And indeed, the rock is part of the structure of the family, of the home. He issued a proclamation. And he did.
He's the guy that debated Sheol.
And he said, you know, the first words out of his mouth when he got there to the Jerusalem summit, he says, you know, what you're saying about you have exclusivity on the Gentiles is craziness. Look what happened. You weren't here at Shavuah, but look what happened at Shavuah. You know, we were empowered to speak the languages of the Gentiles on Shavuah. So what you're saying is, what you're saying is completely untrue. So it's the rock that holds him accountable. And that which connects, he will answer and respond. That connects with the timber. You know, that's the whole thing about Pauline doctrine is that it's a piece of wood. That's going to save you. It's the cross. Salvation through the cross.
We're going to get to that right here at the end. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, in case anybody hasn't noticed, we're walking straight through the biggest giant religion created by a guy named Sheol, which is a fraud. And it was
right.
set up, and he decided to do this with Satan.
Right. It's not just a haphazard, meaningless fraud. It's a plague of death. Woe
oh, yeah.
and plague means a lot of people die. This
yeah,
is not,
really.
You know, like the virus that causes leprosy, and therefore 1/1,000th of 1% of people suffer. No, this is a plague of death. Woe to the one who establishes a place where the flesh is exposed as a source of anguish. Well, you know, that was the whole thing. I mean, that is the basis of Pauline doctrine. The flesh is bad. Therefore, the covenant, which was etched in stone is flesh. Therefore, it's bad. So those commandments are bad. Yahweh wants you physically to attend his Moed Mikre, so they must be bad. You got to attend in the flesh. The circumcision is a mark in the flesh, so that covenant is of the flesh and therefore bad. Observing the Torah requires you to have a copy of it. That's of the flesh. That must be bad. The only thing that's good is spirit. So here's Paul fixated on the flesh is exposed as a source of anguish. In blood and through death, he forms a populated institution promoting that which is unrighteous, invalid, and harmful. Through death. Remember when Chabaok said, what's wrong with him? God, you can't die. And yet, Christianity
yeah, oh, back in Chabaok 1. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You opened right up.
Christianity is a death cult. It's about their God dying. You know, if you're stupid enough to believe the Pauline quote that the totality of God existed bodily on the man, and that body which represented the totality of God died, which means your God died, it's a death cult.
Mm-hmm. That's odd because he said, you know, and I'm Yahweh, your God, who brought you out of the realm of the crucible of oppression and judgment, so
good.
You know and acknowledge no other gods besides me. There's no Savior but me. And on down, you know, when we look further into it, that's why we know he's a diminished manifestation. He
right.
says right there, out of the toil, his soul will see the light and find satisfaction. I will not die. Rather, I exist to recount
right.
and record the deeds of Yah. It says right there. Well, okay, so who died? I mean, that's why they got to have him laying around.
The body of the Passover lamb, period. The soul didn't die. God didn't die. God left him before.
Nothing,
but Christianity is a different. Why do you think the symbol of Christianity is the cross? What was the cross to the Romans?
It was torture.
Torture stake to kill.
Torture and death.
No one survived
it. Yeah.
It's 100% fatal. And so the symbol of Christianity is that which is 100% fatal. And not just 100% fatal, but anguishing.
You want to make a horror
movie? A source of anguish.
Put up a bunch of ghoulish crosses, okay?
Yeah, isn't the crucifix a place where the flesh is exposed as a source
mm-hmm.
of anguish?
Okay.
I mean, that's the crucifix.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think it's a coincidence that the two most common images in Christianity of God are him helplessly nailed to a crucifix, or him as an infant who's, you know, completely
yep.
helpless?
Yeah.
They really
right.
like this idea of a helpless God.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Maybe a good point. I never really thought of it that way. But, yeah, good point. Yeah. Yeah.
100% of their images of him. And the
of course,
images
since
of him baby,
this helpless God wrote about them before they
helpless,
existed,
too.
They might want to take that into account. I mean, just,
yeah.
I would.
Yeah, the images of him being a baby is all designed to elevate the Mother of God, the Queen
oh,
of Heaven,
yeah.
Yeah, the Virgin
yeah.
and Child, Astarte, Ishtar. That's the purpose of that is to bring in the Trinity of the Babylonian religion.
Right.
Yeah. Advanced Babylon.
So his institution, which is popular, is unrighteous, invalid, and harmful. So then God says, why not look here and pay attention? By means of an association with Yahweh. Of the conscripts, the spiritual messengers who provided assistance. You know, why not look here? As opposed to all this harmful stuff, why not look here? But instead, the people expend their energy and grow weary amongst an abundance of worthlessness. And the nations which gather together in excess of delusions and fantasies which are poured forth which are unreal and have no benefit, resulting in nothingness, exhausting and destroying them. So God says, why don't you pay attention to what's written here in my Torah and Prophets? And he said, no, instead the people spend their energy and just grow weary with an abundance of worthlessness.
That sounds familiar, anything?
Yeah, they gather together with an excess of delusions and fantasies, which are all poured forth and have no benefit whatsoever. You know, a lot of people say, you know, there's just no way that that a, you know, a religion as popular as Christianity could be wrong. There's just no way. You go back and say, so what you're, and that, you know, if somebody's at least trying to be a good person in Christianity, that God certainly has got to take that into account. And that's the logic of the faithful. And you say, okay, so what you would tell me is that back in the time of Rome, when the gods were ghoulish and sex perverts, that everybody believed in the same series of gods, and if somebody was really devoutly religious back then, and was a really good religious person, worshiping these ghoulish and sexually perverted gods, that the real God would say, oh boy, that is so endearing. I really want to spend eternity with this moron. I mean, is that what they want to claim?
It doesn't matter what you believe. That's the claim. It's the Janus thing. You know, you weigh your goods against your bad.
Yeah. So they're promoting a bunch of fantasies. They're absolutely useless, invalid, and harmful fantasies.
Let me ask you a question before we move to the next one. Why did you skip 2:14? Was it... In your writing, you wrote 2:14.
This one is just a summation of his criticisms of Paul. When I put it in the chapter on questioning Paul, it's there. But all I'm trying to do here is observation.
Yeshua 11:9-2 was a quote, and I was trying to figure it. It's not as powerful as on the same theme quite.
Yeah, and it's just so much information here, and it's just that without...
No. Yeah.
I'm trying to... In fact, I presented 90% of this in observations without commentary. It just goes, you know, right down one verse after another. And so it's not written like it was in Questioning Paul, where, you know, I devoted the entire chapter to this, and every statement was analyzed and dissected. Here, it's... This is following God condemning Paul in the Proverbs.
Right.
You know, it's so it is. It's just a summation of what he says.
Just kind of pertinent to that.
Yeah. So, woe to the one who causes and allows his companions and countrymen to drink, thereby associating them with your antagonizing venom, but also intoxicating them for the purpose of looking at their genitals. Wow. So here you've got, again, this idea that Paul is intoxicating his countrymen.
And you might want to add in there, holy kisses to you, Timmy.
Yeah, holy
kisses.
Put
that in parentheses somewhere.
Yeah, and then antagonizing venom, that is serpentine toxin, that's satanic stuff. But also intoxicating for the purpose of looking at their genitals. You know, it's the most amazing thing that Paul admits that while he said that if you're circumcised, you can't be saved, and if you're Torah observant and circumcised, then once you're castrated, that his lover boy, Paul, circumcised. And oh, by the way, Paul himself was circumcised.
Paul was circumcised.
So how do you have circumcision be a absolute barrier to salvation in Pauline Christianity? And the advocate of Pauline Christianity is circumcised, and his lover.
Yeah, that's when I started to question Paul.
Hey. Hi, Jason. Yeah, pretty tough right there. What in the world is he doing?
I remember.
He was in this whole meeting where he said circumcision is just this awful thing, and I'm right to denounce it. And the way out of town, he circumcises Timothy.
Yep.
You will get your fill of shame and infamy, a little and lowly status instead of honor and glory. So just in case you didn't know that Shaul, even though he admits it three times, is his given name. Now, this is, you will get your fill of infamy, a little and lowly status. What does Yosef, the Sermon on the Mount, say of Shaul? He's going to be called the lowly and little, what Paulus means.
Paulus.
Yeah.
Yeah, he thought the glory of being the lone spokesperson for God, and what God is saying, no, we're going to call you lowly and little.
I don't know. Neither of you guys have, there's so much of it, John, and there's just so much cracker against Clemens. Do we deserve it to just, a compiled list, where a person can kind of, put an argument for something and everything? Because I know
we have
to show. Go ahead.
Bad connection here, Jason. I'm only picking up about every third word. Are you guys able to hear it better?
No, not really.
No, I'm sorry, Jason. I can't make out your words. There's a really bad echo. There.
Oh,
sorry. So, choosing to intoxicate, in addition, also elect to show them unacceptable. Going around about and over their choice to be circumcised. You know, and for Yahweh to go through and name Paul by name, to talk about his audience being Gentiles, that he's going to create a broad path, which is the broadest path ever conceived in terms of the religion of Christianity, that he's going to come about and at the time of the Moed is when he's going to do this, that this prophecy was written 666 years before Paul wrote his first letter. But then to say that he's going to go on and about circumcision, when that is the fulcrum of Pauline doctrine, that circumcision is why he denounces the Torah, why he was brought into the Jerusalem Council. It's what separated him from God. It's the sign of the covenant. There is only one person ever claiming to speak for God that says circumcision is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. So you're talking about a very detailed prophecy here that was fulfilled.
By the way, what I think that really says, this is just my opinion, I think you show yourself unacceptable using circular reasoning to advance the lack of circumcision. That's what I believe that would be better put.
Yeah, I think that's a valid claim there.
That's what he did. I mean, that's probably the better translation, in my opinion.
Yeah, so he's choosing to intoxicate, to inebriate, so it's choosing to cause, to impair people's judgment. And to show them unacceptable, going around, that means circular reasoning, over their choice not to be circumcised. So
he's using, you show yourself unacceptable using circular reasoning to advance a lack of circumcision. That's what I believe that says.
If
I was going to put it in English, because it sounds a little... broken the other way, and I think that's exactly what he's saying, and that's exactly what he did. So I can't be wrong there.
The end of Galatians is a diatribe against the circumcision. The Jerusalem council that he was brought to was the whole issue was circumcision, and here's God saying 666 years before that would occur, the meeting in his first letter, God's saying, yeah, he's going to use circular reasoning to denounce.
666 years, and how many disciples did he have? Wasn't it 18? It was 18, wasn't it?
Yeah.
360. Okay.
Yeah, 360.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, this is, you, I don't think there is a more detailed, specific, important prophecy in the whole of the Torah and prophets than this one. I think it is the single most important. It applies to the most people. It's the only prophecy that speaks to 2.4 billion people. I mean, all the prophecies about Yisrael in the last days, what have you got? A maximum right now of 15 million Jews worldwide, of which 7 million are in Yisrael, and two-thirds of them are going to die. And so at the very most, you've got 5 million Jews. And so everything he says to them, you're dealing with 5 million. This is 2.4 billion I mean, 5 million isn't even a rounding error.
Well, first of all, you're talking about somebody that's misleading Gentiles, not people in the land. So it can't be, you know, the people in Israel. I mean, it cannot be. It would be excluded here.
Yes. 500 times greater. That's why God spends so much time on it. I mean, it's a combination of things that causes God to be so preoccupied with Pauline doctrine. One is the number of souls. 2.4 billion now, 5 billion in total so far since Pauline Christianity was created. So in terms of just broadness, the broad path of death, there's no plague in all of human history that is this big, this appalling. The second is that it's part of the most vicious, most anti-Semitic, most anti-Israel force in human history, Imperial Rome becoming Roman Catholicism. So I think that's the second reason. The third reason is that it exists to twist everything that God stood for, everything that he did, to create a counterfeit of it and to pile their lies right on top of the truth so that it has the single most debilitating effect on individuals because it hides the truth under a mountain of lies.
Well, yeah, it stops everything right there at the piece of wood. That's the most descriptive. It's the most beautiful way to put it.
You don't even get all the way through Passover, and you're gone, and it's over. Right?
Yeah.
So you're at the first step along the way, and it's just all over.
Yep, that's it. You found the doorway, now you're dead because you can't go in it. Because that's not, you know, stop right here at the piece of wood. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, stop right here at the piece of wood. Yeah. Did God tell us that on Pesach that the piece of wood will be the sign?
No.
And it was the blood that was the sign, right? The blood of the Passover lamb that they were eating inside. That celebrating Passover, they were eating inside with unleavened bread. They were eating that inside, and it was the blood on the doorway, not a piece of wood.
Right.
A piece of wood wasn't a sign. And by the way, was it a sign for God or for them?
A sign for God, so not to come in.
But they're going to say, they're going to say blood going down the cross. You know, and you're going, okay.
It's the blood on the doorway to life. Doorway.
Yeah. Did any of the other disciples even mention the cross?
No, there's no cross. No, God doesn't have a cross.
I ever did.
No, I mean, there wasn't a cross. It was an upright pillar. But I do have to ask
my
you
point.
This.
If any of the other disciples didn't even mention it, then it's just another contrast.
The other thing is, let's suppose you were in Egypt. Let's suppose, Jason, you, me, Craig, JB, Kirk, we're in Egypt, and we put blood on the lentils and everything, and the angel of death passes over us, the Malach. Okay, he passes over us. And then when everybody decides to pack up and leave without the bread leavening, you know, I mean, they get what they got and they get out of there, we go, well, we're just going to stay. How do you think that would work out for us? Because that's where the Christians are.
Way back into slavery.
Yeah, there you go.
Imagine the Egyptians who chased after them. Imagine if you were a Israelite and you say, you know, I think I'm just going to stay right here. This was good enough for me. I enjoyed that. It was a nice meal. That was my last supper. I'm going to stay right here. You wouldn't live till morning.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't live through a week. I know that. You'd probably be tortured.
Your God just killed the firstborn son of every household, and that was the tenth of 10 plagues. No, you know, you are not welcome here.
Well, if that's what they're doing at the base of the cross. They're staying right there.
Stopping. Yep. Stopping right there.
Yep.
Yep, right there.
I was asking you guys before I had that bad connection. Just because there's such a mountain racked up against Paul now, and I was just wondering if anybody has, like, just compiled a list of just, like, you know, verse and point.
Of 300
so, like,
things?
A person can, they can put together an argument for, you know, some individual.
I've got 20.
That they know.
There's questioning beyond questioning Paul, you mean?
know, yeah, Question Paul has 1,200 pages of.
I mean, we've seen
that
point out
was
stuff.
A fraud. Now, I think what would be interesting is to take what's written in the Torah or what's in the witness writings that Yosha said and compare it to what Paul said.
I've got a note that does that.
I would love to get it because if I was to hand, I want to give
yeah,
it to
there's,
my,
there's,
both
but there's
my dad
just hundreds and hundreds
but.
And hundreds of these, and it's just all over the place.
Else.
I mean, every time that Paul says something, it was said the opposite.
Oh yeah, it's dark.
Yeah, and I've mentioned a few of them, to my dad, and he's like, yeah, you know, you're right, it's true, and it's like, wow, okay, well. I don't know. I was gonna give some questions, Paul, and all that. But when it comes to like my wife,
no, I've got
a
shorthand.
I wanted to
shorthand
stuff together. Yeah, because
if you go to a website, JesusIsWorthAll.com, they have I think comparisons. Now it's of course just standard English translations, and they use Jesus, unfortunately. But they compare what their Jesus said to what Paul said, and they've got hundreds of conflicts between the two.
Yeah, what was the address to that? Sorry,
it's called,
I was talking over
Jesus' Words Only. If you Google Jesus' Words Only,
sometimes I don't know. I'm just thinking of a way I can put together something for my wife. And I know that if I came up with a completely different translation, she'd be like, I don't know about that. Or if I,
Question Paul has five translations. So every verse in Question Paul, there's five translations. There's the,
The
King James, the New Living Translations, the New American Standard Bible, an interlinear that is part of the Nestle Allen. Version of the interlinear, and so there's McReynolds, I think, is the interlinear that's part of the Nestle Allen. So it's got five translations of every verse. You can pick.
Well, you know what? I've got one right here. Okay, this is just an example. Okay,
yeah.
I committed a sin in humbling myself because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge. Boy, talk about being full of himself. Isn't that what we just went to? This guy's proud and puffed up. I robbed other churches, taking wages to serve you. Now, here's what it says in Yashayah. Without money or cost, listen carefully to me, incline your ear, and come to me. Listen so that you may live, so that I'll be able to establish an everlasting covenant relationship with you. That's Yashayah 55:3.
Yeah, verse
starts right out. Without money or cost. Then you go down here to Malachi. Does God exploit and rob? But indeed,
you
all exploit and
that,
rob.
Here's a little one because I was just dealing with it the other day. Paul in his letter to Timothy was saying that this fella that was accused of having sex, I think, with his mother. And Paul's comment was, that's such abysmal behavior, even more abysmal behavior than even the pagan nations would engage in. That's Paul saying that the sex with one's mother is behavior that even the pagans, Gentile nations don't do. And so when Yahweh is articulating in the Torah the behaviors that the sexual behaviors that he's against, the dominant sexual behavior that he speaks out against are all forms of incest. And one of those is a man having sex with his mother. And he says that these behaviors are common in the Gentile nations. Yeah.
Yeah.
So God
this
is saying
the
opposite of what Paul wrote.
Well, no, here's one.
One of a thousand
they've set up rulers and kings Right. But not by me. They've appointed governors and put leaders in positions of authority whom I do not know. Well, that puts the kibosh on him being omnipresent and loving everyone. Because
well,
he
destroys
know
Paul's positions in Romans 13,
Romans,
which says the government are of God.
Let every being be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from Elohim, and the authorities that exist are appointed by Elohim. Now, signs and wonders. Paul said in Corinthians, truly the signs of an apostle were wrought among you in all patience and in signs and wonders and mighty deeds. And he says, through mighty signs and wonders over in Romans, by the power of the Spirit of God, so that from Jerusalem around unto Elysium, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. Okay? And Yahusha said this, for there shall be arise false messiahs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And false prophets,
signs and wonders.
And they'll show great signs and wonders in so much that if it were possible, they'd fool even you. It's one after another. It's not one thing. It's just hundreds of things.
I think what I only have to do is I got to discredit Paul using sort of the common translations for now, at least so I can just... to get her to question him.
The one that got me was when you're just stopping my tracks was in Galatians where he says that the covenant memorialized on Mount Sinai. On Mount Sinai is where the Torah was given. That the covenant memorialized on Mount Sinai was with Hagar and in slaves.
Oh no!
And you just lay that down and said, okay, that is an absolute lie.
Yeah.
Why would you believe an absolute lie?
Yeah.
Or just go to the next one, where Paul claims at the end of 2 Corinthians, I'm demon possessed.
That I'm definitely using that one.
He says Satan helps him to get out Yahweh's words. Can you imagine?
Yes. Well, and the contrast between what he said and Yahusha said is probably.
Right.
And then he actually said twice
that he took people to Satan for salvation.
What? I haven't heard that one.
Oh, yeah, Paul.
Yeah, that was pretty damning.
He says that he took people to Satan for their salvation twice. Jason, why don't you say, if you send me an email, I will send you the seven chapters so far of Observations for Our Time. Because I've got a whole lot of Paul material in those first seven chapters.
Yeah.
So just send me an email and I will send you the seven.
How about call no man father? And over in parentheses, I became your father in Yahusha, Messiah, through the gospel. I encourage you then be imitators of me.
Yeah.
Yahusha didn't even say that. He didn't even say imitate me.
Jason, let me pile one other thing on there. Yosha quotes everything out of the Torah that he says just about. It's not local directional things or something. So everything he says is a direct quote, and you can almost look up every one of them in any old-fashioned Bible. We'll also have those down the middle column. In addition to that, Paul never quotes anything he says, but he says he represents him.
Yeah.
Never once quotes him. How can you represent somebody and never quote him?
I have
How
no
can
idea.
You represent somebody and take what I Paul say?
It's hard to quote somebody when you're contradicting everything they say.
Yeah, but right. I mean, it's just, give me a break here. If he never quotes you, who the heck are you representing? You ain't representing me.
Yeah, he makes one attempt and he gets that quote wrong.
Yeah.
It was trying to establish a new covenant. And he gets the quote completely wrong. So there's only one attempt that Paul even makes, and he gets it wrong. And there's only one prophecy that Paul attempts, and he gets that wrong.
In Devarim, if you get one of them wrong, you don't get it right, you duff. You're over.
He's
alive.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's
the meaning of the rapture, his harpazo, he says that when those of us who are alive will be caught up, in the winking of an eye, and he is specifically saying that it's going to occur during his lifetime. Oops.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
But guys that are liars, they don't really care.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, he doesn't call it Charrua. He calls it Harpazo, which is a vicious
snatching
away. It's the term that Yosha used in association with the wolf in sheep's clothing, saying that he'll snatch you away. Both of them used Harpazo, but Harpazo speaks of the wolf snatching away viciously. But that's the term that Paul chose to use, and it's just... Everything about this guy's
good connection there.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I think
connections people aren't going to make. I mean, that's good.
Let's start with Dalvarim and also how Yasher promotes the Torah. He doesn't have anything to bad to say about the Torah.
He handled his father's work.
And then contrast that with Paul Fred, and that's pretty good.
Matanya 3, 4, and or actually 5, 6, and 7. Matanya 5, 6, and 7, which are the Yosha's proclamation against Christianity, specifically in Paul, Christianity generally, Paul specifically. That ought to be enough to cause anybody that is a Christian to say, no, you're right. In fact, even this idea that he came to fulfill the Torah, so fulfilling does away with it. In context, that's not a possible. First of all, that's not what fulfill means. It doesn't mean to do away with it. Beyond that, he says, do not think that I came to annul it.
Oh yeah, that's one of the best.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
So
come to do away with it. And so you can't take fulfill as to do away with because his previous statement. Don't think that I came to do that.
Yeah.
Every stroke of every letter in the Hebrew is going to continue to endure so long as the heavens and earth exist. So the Pauline notion that the Torah has been annulled is in direct conflict with what Yosha said. So if you're claiming to speak for Yosha and you contradict him, guess what?
You're lying.
Yeah, you don't speak for him.
It's funny, too. I listened to some of the Alex Jones show last week or so. And one thing that jumped in my mind was, because he often mentioned Christianity and things like that. And I always thought there was that whole quote from Paul where he says, submit to your government.
Yeah.
I would like that one.
Oh, his claim is that's misunderstood. And, of course, that's bizarre. That's totally bizarre.
Yeah,
I mean,
clear.
He just said it strongly.
We've got old copies of written... scribed within 25 years of Paul's death of Romans 13. And so that's what he wrote. And the words are clear.
Yeah.
Submit to your government because all governments are about.
That's a big problem.
And God's point of view is not only the opposite of that. God calls the Roman government the worst beast that would ever plague the planet.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is that Pauline Christianity even existed past 133 CE, because after Paul spoke about the that no government wields the sword in vain, they only wield the sword for right reasons, and that all governments are appointed by God, and then within 20 years of that. Rome came down and viciously destroyed the temple and Jerusalem, and that another 30 or 50 years after that, they came back and destroyed the entire land and murdered hundreds of thousands of people. And after that occurred, government, and he's writing about the Roman government, why would there be a single Christian on the planet after that?
Yeah, and then... I think Larry mentioned it the other day too, and is there any reason, I don't think there's any way Yahusha would have said to love your enemy.
I don't think so.
I mean, how can, no way,
No.
You know?
No, because because Yahweh clearly hates his enemies. And, you know, in Yashaya, he says, well, not only do I hate them. And in fact, in the Proverbs, he said, these are the things I hate. But when he returns, he says specifically, I hate these people, and I'm going to pulverize them. Yeah, that's just what I'm going to do. So, and you read the Psalms of Dode. I mean, he's constantly hating his enemies. So no,
yeah.
God knows that to be loving, you have to hate. To be moral, you have to hate.
Oh, I have one other thing that I got to ask you guys before I go.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I wish I could have been on observations a little more often, but I've just been like crazy dealing with work and financial issues and stuff. But I have been able to get a little bit dabbling a bit with the original language software I got, and I wanted to put together just my own translations in a word processor, and just use like the find replace function to slowly kind of edit things out.
Right.
The Lord and things like that. But I was wondering, like, how would I put together, I want to start with actually the Hebrew text. Can I, because the version I have, when I went to replace, when I looked at all the sightings of Lord, it was like 6,000. So I'm wondering, am I missing bits and pieces of it?
Yeah, because there's a lot of places where there's Yahweh where they did not replace it with Lord, but there are exactly 7,000 Yahwehs that have been removed, 6,800 and I don't know what the number is, 60 something that are in the Masoretic. Where there's Yahweh and it's been replaced by either God or Lord. And then on top of that, we found in the Dead Sea Scrolls 132, I believe, is the number that were not in the Masoretic.
It is, yeah. It's 6,868 and then 132.
Yeah, then 132, yeah. That brings you to the total.
7,000. How odd.
So
another 7 shows up.
In the Masoretic, yeah. It says Adonai. And then if you go back further to the Dead Sea, it's Yahweh's in there in the same place?
Yes, correct. Yeah, and the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Qumran Scrolls, there is no Adonai. Every place that there is Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, they wrote Yahweh's name. 100%.
Do you think there's any chance we can get like, at least a translation that's, like, online or something, you know, before the shit hits the fan?
The whole shebang now.
I know the whole shebang is going to be hard to do, but I'm just saying, like, if we could compile everything that we've come to know and, you know, at least edit those things out,
there have been times where people took, when it was just yada yada, and they took all of the...
Took a scripture-only version.
Yeah, and they did it in the order that it appears in the Tanakh. And it was presented just as Yahweh's words only, as they appear in the Tanakh, with no commentary on it. And somebody did that some time ago, but of course then, you know, I've been through over the books 7 times and upgraded the translations, and I don't think they've been done since.
It became
a very
futile task.
Yeah, you know, but if somebody wanted to do it, I mean, I have all of the chapters now. They're in a lockbox, and so the lockbox is accessible. So somebody can go, and all of the files are available. I started using a lockbox.
You have all of your translations in, a single file, or, you know, organized files, like just your translation?
No. No, people have done that in the past, but they did it back on my first pass translations, and I've edited most every book, you know, 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
But I don't think it exists on the current translations. Wow. But I'm just saying that all the chapters, every chapter of every book is in a lockbox, which anybody can get access to. I try to limit the access to it just because of the fact you can go into it. You know, anybody that has access to it, you go into it and then... and also destroy what's there.
That it
so, got to be, yeah, you got to be really careful.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey,
but they are in the lockbox, and we, you know, somebody wanted to put together that they could. I think there's people now putting together a glossary of terms, which is also helpful. You know, the glossary of terms going out every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Hebrew terms with amplified translations. You know, the glossary of terms.
Like a yada yada lexicon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A yada yada lexicon.
Yeah. The only thing I ever did a sort of a glossary for a quick lookup was stems. You know, the stems can get really pretty complicated as to the interaction between the subject and the object, passive and active, and bringing about a state and the like. And there was a while there where I took the stems and I actually wrote a kind of a generic that I could copy and paste for the stems and just make them applicable to each verb. But then after a while I said, you know, that's just since it's all wrapped around the action of the verb, the subject and the object changes and every verb is different, and you still have to deal with the moods and the conjugations. I said that wasn't a very good idea, so I don't actually use a glossary for anything. Every word methodically, look it up, and even words that, I know them by sight, of course, in Hebrew, and have translated them thousands of times. I still go through just the discipline, because every time, sometimes you look it up and you say, you run into a new root or a related word, or you see something that just, I don't know why I didn't pick that up before, but.
You see it as
a methodical way is the best way to go.
Let me real quick before I have to go. Can I ask Larry a quick question?
Yeah.
Larry, we were trying to help you on email, send you a communication around that email on Facebook. You didn't respond, and I'm having trouble with Facebook. I have a business page, of course, but I'm having a little trouble getting a hold to you. Did you receive anything?
I didn't. No.
But
you got to remember, I had to start a new Facebook page because they shut one of them down, Kirk. Mm-hmm. So you might be sending it to the wrong one. Let me make sure you're on my friends list. I'll send you something, and then you can send back.
And we can talk. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Let's do that. I need to run. I'm sorry, guys. I appreciate you very much joining y'all tonight. Are we going to pick up about 2:17 next week, you think?
Yes, we are. Yep.
All right, son. Well, forgive me. Shabbat shalom, and I'll
yep,
talk to you later.
Good night, y'all.
Thank you.
Yep. Good to talk to you guys
bye-bye.
Next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
You got you. Bye-bye.